This morning's reading is taken from Mark chapter 6, verses 30 to 44, and can be found on page 1009 of the Church Bibles. Jesus feeds the 5,000. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, "Five, and two fish." Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the five loaves and the two fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the two fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. This is the word of the Lord.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Lovely to be sharing with you. If you don't know me, my name's Andy Peck, husband to Nick, who helps run in the holiday club. She's helping run lighthouses this morning, and dad to Josh, age 15, and Cameron, 13. So you'll have gathered we're looking this morning at stewardship. Stewardship traditionally is known as looking at your time, your talents, and indeed, as we've reflected on already, your cash. So our time in an age of busyness, our talents in an age where we have constant comparison, indeed our talents often connected to the kind of job that we have, and of course our money, a topic that we don't talk about in polite society, and especially not in the UK. So we call all this stewardship. But it's important, of course, that we understand what God has to say about the topic. To some of us, perhaps, we think stewardship is basically give us your money, and that's the message. But actually, it's about getting God's perspective upon our lives. And we're used, I guess, to people asking us for money, for fundraisers trying to tug at the emotional heartstrings to get us to give that bit more. But as far as the church is concerned, the approach to raising cash, to raising funds, is completely different. And Mark 6 and other passages, I think, give us an exciting vision of what we should understand about our resources. So our passage this morning is one of the very few miracles that is included in all four of the Gospels. Some of you know the passage well, five loaves and two fish, feeding 5,000 plus, 5,000 men plus women and children. And if you find the miraculous hard to believe, then I appreciate that this is going to be a tough miracle for you to swallow. But it's not untypical of the kind of things which Jesus was doing in the Gospels, and indeed inviting his followers to engage in as well. The supernatural is very much part of the Gospel message. Jesus had come with a message, of course, of that God was doing a new thing within his ministry, calling the people of Israel to turn back to God, to repent and to believe the good news of what he was doing. And the miraculous was a sign of God's involvement with people. It was a foretaste of the life to come, if you like, when there'll be no pain and dying and starvation at all. And so he involves his team of 12 in this work. He's training them for the day when he will physically leave this earth and they will carry on the work with the help of his Spirit. And so three things I want us to look at this morning under this topic. And the first is that God calls us into partnership. The big difference between fundraising and stewardship is relationship. You see, the charity or the cause may not particularly care for you. They just want you to give them your money. But God first invites us into relationship with him. And the 12 disciples, of course, had known that. They'd been called to follow Jesus. They'd already been engaging a little in some of the miraculous work that he'd done. That was hinted at the very start of our passage as they told Jesus all the things they began to do. And if you look back in the passage, that was preaching the good news, casting out demons, healing the sick. And these disciples had left all to follow Jesus. They'd known God's daily provision, and in other parts of the Gospels, there's a bit of a hint at some of the financial arrangements. There's a group of women particularly who it seems would support Jesus and his team financially and perhaps cooking meals and the like. And now Jesus and his team are getting out for a bit of rest and relaxation, trying to get away from the crowds, but they discover that Jesus was where Jesus was, and so they flock towards him, and Jesus, seeing them, teaches them, and of course it gets to late in the day, and there's that need. The disciples perhaps a little bit feeling awkward. We wanted some special time with Jesus. These people have come. Now, Jesus, it's time to send them away to go and get some food. And indeed, but Jesus says, well, no, we don't need to do that. You give them something to eat. And then we'll come back to that in a little while. But the disciples were starting to know that relationship was key to their time with God and with Jesus. And indeed, they, being Jewish people, of course, knew the great covenants of God, the Old Testament covenant between God and his people, Israel. And the big metaphor within the Old Testament is the metaphor of marriage. God, as it were, says Israel is a bit like his bride, his special people who he loves and cares for. And that's a helpful metaphor, I think, for us as we think in terms of stewardship. It's this metaphor of relationship. Just as a husband and wife come together in mutual commitment towards one another, and then they, you know, some of us said in the marriage vows, you know, all I have, I share with you. That's part of the relationship a husband and wife have within marriage. And of course, if you know, forgive me for mentioning it, but if money is exchanged between a man and a woman outside of the marriage bond, it's something else is going on. So marriage is no, we're in this together. We're sharing our life together. And so God, first of all, invites us to say, can you trust me with your life, with your time, with your talents, and indeed with your finances? And that's the key, if you like, that key emotional to the kind of concept of, well, God, does God want my money? Well, no, God wants you first to come into relationship with him. Our stewardship is to be seen within that context. But then secondly, God's economics are different to ours. I haven't particularly read that book. I just found the image, which was quite helpful. God's economics are different to ours. So the 12, discovering that walking with Jesus is very different from what they might have expected, Jesus is calling them to be involved in the miraculous. And so then Jesus says to them, so you give them something to eat. They're trying to send the crowds away. And they must have been incredibly surprised. And of course, that's hinted in the text. So, you know, we need loads of money to pay enough food for these people. What on earth are you talking about? But perhaps they had this inkling that, having been involved in the miraculous, Jesus might do something very special. And so Jesus clearly demonstrates that he's able to do something very special. But why the command? And I'm interested looking a bit later on in Mark's Gospel, where in Mark 7 there was a lesser known miracle, the feeding of the 4,000. And that was after 3 days of being a gathering. And here, Mark 8, Jesus says, aware of their discussion, Jesus asks them, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears that fail to hear? And don't you remember, when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? 12, they replied. And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? They answered, 7. He said to them, do you still not understand? And you might be thinking, well, I don't understand either. But the reality is, you see, Jesus is saying, look, I'm lavish in the way that I care for people. There's lots left over. Don't you think that God, who knew the miracle could do a miracle, could also just give enough so there wasn't enough left over? But God's demonstrated there's 12 basketfuls left over and 7 basketfuls left over later on. God is lavish in his provisions. God's economics are very different from ours. And that's certainly been my experience, and Nick has shared. I didn't know exactly what Nick was going to say, but having come to faith around about the age of 7, got serious about God certainly in my teenage years, was at college, and God particularly challenged me about tithing my university grant back in the days before student loans where you got a decent amount of money. So that's what I sought to do. And so as a married couple, certainly we seek to give 10%, certainly it's after tax as it happens, and if you're looking at details, but we don't think it's a law. We believe that the New Testament is free. We're free to give freely of our money, but that's just how we happen to choose to live. But saying that sounds, you know, almost boastful about it, but it's really not how it is, because when you're in relationship with God, there's a different dynamic involved. So in being called into Christian ministry, as I was in my mid-20s, I had a period when I had a normal salary working for a church, working for two churches. And so there, obviously, 10% of that is a decent sum of money. We then worked for 4 years in a church which couldn't afford to give me a salary, and so I was depending on my wife's teaching salary. So our 10% was much, much less. But you see, the reality of the relationship with God is that God was kind of giving to us at this point. And so there would be extraordinary one-off gifts, including an amazing, humongous gift that we received. And so it's embarrassing to say, well, I give 10%, because I'd have to say to you, well, actually, and God's done all these things as well for me, because it's part of relationship. That's kind of how it works. And so now I'm in a work for a Christian training charity. My wife has a teaching job where our 10% is a bit larger than it used to be. And that's great, but God still wonderfully provides when we need him to. Because you lay your life before God, your time, your talents, and your cash, and you say, well, what are we going to do? I talk about God's economics. 90% always goes as far as 100%. That's certainly what we found. I could probably hand a microphone around, and a lot of people would say the same, that as you give generously to God, whether it's 5% or 4% or 10% or 20%, God looks after us. That's part of being in relationship with him. This was summed up very helpfully by C.S. Lewis, who often just puts words to ideas very well. In his book, Mere Christianity, every faculty you have, every power of thinking or of moving your limbs from movement to movement, is given to you by God. If you devoted every moment of your life exclusively to his service, you could not give him anything that was not, in a sense, his own already. So that when we talk of a man doing anything for God or giving anything to God, I will tell you what it is really like. It's like a small child going to his father and saying, Daddy, give me sixpence to buy you a birthday present. This is back in the 60s, of course. Of course, the father does, and he is pleased with the child's present. It is all very nice and proper. But only an idiot would think that the father is sixpence to the good on the transaction. You see the point? So, you know, we have time, talents, and cash. We give it to the Lord. But it's done joyfully without pride, because we gain so much more back, because God is such generous, so generous in how he gives. And so my third and final point is that God meets you where you are. You see, this miracle has people at different levels of faith, doesn't it? It has Jesus, who, let's not forget, was fully man, fully God, but still has to trust his Father as he blesses the food and distributes it, and is saying, Lord, you need to do something here. But you also have the 12 who had seen God do some things, but for them, this was a bit of a stretch. So when Jesus says, you give them something to eat, he's saying, they're thinking, can't do this. And so they're growing in their faith, but they're involved still. Jesus didn't say, well, stuff you, I'm going to go and find some people with some faith. He says, well, you give out the food. And I don't know how the physics works, whether the bread and the fish multiplies in the basket, or as they were giving, whether they could physically see the fish grow. But God, who's made the universe, can sort the physics out, of course. But it's a miracle, and they're engaged in it. But there's also, and John's gospel tells us, the small boy who relinquishes his lunch that his mum has provided in order for it all to happen, probably not knowing at all what's going to happen, that these gruff men are looking for anyone with some food, and he gives up his lunch. So he has perhaps zero faith, but he's involved. God involves him where he is. And so for some of you, you're checking out the Christian faith, and it's great to see you. And for you, giving any money to the church would be inappropriate, because you're not there yet. And that's fine. You know, enjoy the hospitality for as long as you need to. Others of us have been on the road a bit longer, and so maybe God is saying, well, you know, how about a bit more of your cash, or to offering your life a bit more fully to my services? Maybe a bit more time. Maybe some of your talents, which you kept hidden, ought to be engaged a bit more in serving God. And so this challenges perhaps, not just for our challenges the way we view cash, but also the way we use our time and our talents. I mean, imagine Sarah, who works for a Christian charity that reaches people with the gospel in an admin role, but it does not suit her at all. She earns $25,000 a year and gives a proportion to a church. And then Jasmine works as a nurse at the hospital and absolutely loves it, but she also earns $25,000 a year and gives a similar proportion to the church. Who is the better steward? One working for a Christian charity helping the gospel, one working in a hospital. One hates it, one loves it. Well, you're probably asking the question, you've got the idea. That one is stewarding their time and talents to use to be service in the community. We have all that we have is for the Lord, and we're to use it wisely. And sometimes that just means seeing the whole of life, including our work or including our retirement years, for the Lord. And then he can reason out how it works out for him. And if this miracle tells us anything, I believe it tells us about the joy and adventure of walking with God and of learning from God. I was reflecting upon Jesus' own stewardship of his own life. You think he lived, well, we're not exactly sure. He probably died AD 33. And given that he was probably born around 4 BC, he was probably about 35, 36, 37. How much of his time, his public ministry, was as a proportion of his whole life? Maybe 8 to 10%? So 90% of Jesus' whole life was spent in obscurity, much of it as a carpenter. And yet he was doing fully the will of God all the time. So for some of us, maybe it's saying, my commute to work and the 50, 60 hours I give, That needs to be for the Lord. I'm not going to feel guilty about what I can't do for the church. That's for the Lord. I'm going to start praying for colleagues. I'm going to start living the best I can to do my best job for the Lord. Brothers of you, there'll be other questions to be asked. It's about saying, Lord, here I am. Use me. And wherever we are, God meets with us. Some of you are parents or grandparents, or you have nephews or nieces, and you can remember, or maybe you're going through it at the moment, that first moment when they start to walk. And you're kind of looking, oh, he's walking. You know, we see people walking all the time. No, it's a long time since anyone commended me for walking. But they're walking. And God, as he looks on us, loves us dearly. And any steps we make towards him, whether it's giving of time, talents, or cash, he's rejoicing. And he says, yes, they're getting it. That's the kind of God that we are. So you know perhaps what the next step will be, or maybe you're still asking the question. Maybe as you receive communion shortly and reflect on the God who gave himself for us, it might be a time when you open your hands afresh to him and ask him to lead you further. Give him your diary, your CV, and your Visa card, and say, surprise me, and God help us.